Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open our show with some national news stories from Public News Service, including the latest on Hurricane Florence, an effort in California to ban junk health care insurance, and some top Native American news stories. The U.S. State Department has issued a broad travel warning for visitors to Mexico, and we'll have details. We'll also have info on Toyota's recall of some Prius models due to a danger of explosions. In local news, hear about toxic algae blooms found in some local lakes and what you should know to keep yourself and your pets safe. On Crime Beat, learn about a former Grossmont College football coach who was the victim in a murder-suicide. Our newsmaker interview today is Kamal Martin, a candidate running for the Lemon Grove City Council. He's got a diverse resume that includes working as a firefighter, a college instructor, a taxi driver, a legislative district director, and more. Then on Destination East County, hear about some hot events coming up, including the Alley Cat Art Walk in El Cajon, Julian's Music Festival, the Santa Isabel Mission's Bicentennial, Haunt Fest on Main, the Borrego Days Parade, and more. The Environmental Impact Report on a controversial sand mining project proposed in Lakeside is now available for public comments. Find out how to make your views known on today's show. An arrest warrant has been issued for Jessica Colasso, head of the Middle Eastern Chamber of Commerce and wife of El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasso, and we'll have details on our Crime Beat report. And finally, on People Power, hear about the new Brady Family Clubhouse and Bill Walton Gymnasium soon to open at the Boys and Girls Club in La Mesa. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, September the 10th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Hurricane Florence, now a threat to the East Coast. Also on the Monday rundown, consumer advocates urge California's governor to limit short-term health plans, and a pair of reports on Native Americans, on justice and the environment. Now our top story, Florence has strengthened back into a hurricane and is forecast to rapidly intensify into a major hurricane sometime today. The Weather Channel forecasts it could pose a serious danger for the U.S. East Coast, where a direct strike is now increasingly likely mid to late week. As of late Sunday, Florence was still more than 700 miles southeast of Bermuda, moving due westward. Groups fighting to keep California's health care system on track are calling on Governor Jerry Brown to sign Bill 910 in the Senate. It would limit short-term insurance plans. The Trump administration finalized new rules in August to allow so-called skinny plans to remain in force for 3 years, claiming it would increase competition and offer a lower-cost alternative. But California State Senator Ed Hernandez, who authored the bill, calls these plans junk insurance that will rob consumers of important protections.
They don't realize that they can get kicked off with a pre-existing condition. There's no maximum out-of-pocket expenses. If they get some kind of devastating health condition, it could lead them into bankruptcy.
These short-term plans are exempt from the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. Many don't offer coverage for mental health, maternity, or pediatric care. Researchers tapping more than 8 decades of data say unions have played a critical role in reducing income inequality. Here's Eric Galatis.
When unions are strong, workers have bargaining power with their bosses, but unions also help drive policies that ensure gains from worker productivity benefit everyone, including Social Security, Medicare, higher minimum wages, and paid family leave. As union coverage dropped sharply over the past 4 decades, researchers tracked a rise in inequality. Sue Martin with the Nebraska AFL-CIO says she's not surprised by the study's results.
Workers have been seeing stagnant wages over the past several years, while the top 1% are getting richer. And Nebraska, like other states, have progressively seen a decline in union membership, while the CEOs of large corporations' income has skyrocketed.
Martin says unions help wages go up for all workers because they help establish pay and benefit standards that even non-union firms adopt. She notes that declines in union membership are no accident, but a result of specific actions designed to weaken unions, including so-called right-to-work laws. Proponents claim such laws protect workers against being forced to join a union, but Martin points out that forcing anyone to join is already prohibited by federal law.
Murder rates for Native American women in some communities are 10 times that of the national average. Eric Tegedoff reports two projects are revealing the other half of this story by taking a deeper look into the lives of these missing and murdered women across North America.
Anita Lucchesi, a PhD student at the University of Lethbridge in Alberta, began the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women database when she found accurate numbers of these cases didn't exist. But the project isn't just a collection of statistics. There's also a workshop component where people affected by this issue get a chance to create maps telling their stories.
For Indigenous peoples, our stories are already inherently tied to the land, so it's a natural jump to tell our stories using maps.
As of April, there are 2,500 cases in the database.
And finally, Roz Brown reports members of the Navajo Nation are in New York City today to call attention to the fate of the biggest coal power plant in the West.
The Navajo Generating Station in northern Arizona is set to close next year, but New York investment firm Avenue Capital Group is considering buying it. The coal plant provides hundreds of jobs to the Navajo people and is a major source of revenue for the tribe. This is critical on the Navajo reservation, where unemployment is around 45%. So many Navajo support the sale and continued operation of the plant. But Nicole Horseherder, who directs a Navajo environmental nonprofit, says the coal plant has led to air and water pollution and health consequences for her neighbors.
I think it's important for people out there to know that the type of jobs and the type of revenues we need is one that does not kill people.
The Navajo Generating Station provides power to consumers in Arizona, Nevada, and California. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week, News and Cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
The U.S. State Department has issued an updated travel advisory warning against all travel to several Mexican states where, quote, violent crime, such as homicide, kidnapping, carjacking, and robbery is widespread. U.S. citizens and residents are advised not to travel at all to the states of Colima, Guerrero, Michoacán, Sinaloa, or Tamaulipas. Travelers are also advised to use increased caution or rethink travel to most other Mexican states. There are no U.S. government restrictions in tourist areas in Tijuana, Rosarito, or Ensenada in Baja California, nor in the tourist areas of Cabo San Lucas, San Jose del Cabo, and La Paz. If you do travel to Mexico, the State Department recommends use toll roads when possible and avoid driving at night, exercise increased caution when visiting local bars, nightclubs, and casinos, do not display signs of wealth, such as wearing expensive watches or jewelry, be extra vigilant when visiting banks or ATMs, enroll in the Smart Traveler Enrollment Program to receive alerts and make it easier to locate you in an emergency. Follow the Department of State on Facebook and Twitter, and review the State Department's crime and safety reports for Mexico. U.S. citizens who travel abroad should also have a contingency plan for emergency situations. You can review the traveler's checklist on the U.S. State Department's website and get a list of emergency contact numbers there as well. However, in Mexico, U.S. government employees are prohibited from traveling to certain areas and are limited to daytime travel in other areas, so their ability to provide emergency services to travelers is limited, the State Department warns. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is John Fisteer with a consumer safety alert. Toyota has ordered a recall of some Prius hybrid vehicles made between June 2015 and May 2018 due to an electrical system defect that can cause fires. Wire harnesses connected to the vehicle's power control units can wear out and overheat, causing fires. The company reports it will fix the problem free and will notify customers starting this month. Approximately 192,000 of the recalled vehicles were sold in the U.S., according to Toyota. who did not state whether any injuries or deaths have occurred because of the defects. The Prius has faced recalls before over parking brakes, as well as an exploding airbag hazard that affected numerous other vehicles as well. You can learn more and look up your Toyota's vehicle identification number to search for recalls at toyota.com.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. The state is warning visitors to California lakes and reservoirs to beware of potentially toxic blue-green algae, which can sicken humans and even kill pets who are exposed to the greenish scum that forms on the water's surface. According to the California Water Boards, blue-green algae, also known as cyanobacteria, can cause harmful algae blooms that produce toxins when a combination of warm temperatures, stagnant water, and excessive nutrient input occurs. Now, locally, the county has been battling blue-green algae at Lake Morena County Park in Campo, a popular camping and fishing location. The lake is a reservoir owned by the City of San Diego, which draws drinking water from Lake Morena, though County Parks and Recreation operates the park and recreational activities at the lake. According to Jessica Geisler, the county's marketing and public outreach manager, levels of bacteria are regularly monitored and tested by the county. She confirms that blue-green algae, which forms naturally in warm weather and shallow water, is present in the lake. But she says that tests in August confirm the cyanobacteria produced by algae blooms are still below state levels of concern. She adds that testing completed by the City of San Diego in May confirms the water is healthy and well oxygenated. If test results were to show levels high enough to warrant concern, rangers would post signs and inform park visitors, in addition to posting an alert on the sdparks.org website, says Geisler. But the blue-green algae situation at Santee's Lindo Lake County Park is not so rosy. Geisler says Lindo Lake is different than Lake Morena because it is the only natural lake in San Diego County, and with that comes challenges, including stormwater runoff and prolonged drought. She says the county's actively working to address those issues with a long-term lake restoration project. That includes dredging to bring increased water depth, an aeration system, a water movement system, and runoff control measures. Two water quality control measures have already been implemented to filter runoff that enters Lindo Lake from the west and south. One is a bioswale, an underground sediment retention basin. The other is a modular wetland system that filters water before it enters the lake. Better water filtration, flow, and depth should curb the growth of blue-green algae in the future. But for now, because the bacterial levels are high, the county has posted signs and web updates to warn the public at Lindo Lake. The toxins in blue-green algae pose risks to the health and safety of people and pets if they drink the water or engage in recreational activities such as swimming or boating. The toxins can also accumulate in fish and shellfish to levels that pose threats to people and wildlife. You, your pets, and the wildlife can also be directly exposed by breathing in airborne droplets or mist containing cyanotoxins. People or animals exposed to these toxins through direct skin contact or inhalation may experience irritation of the skin, eyes, nose, throat, and respiratory tract. Health risks to dogs are even more serious because toxic algae can stop a dog's liver from functioning properly. Blue-green algae exposure is often fatal to dogs and can cause other long-term health problems if dogs survive after drinking or swimming in algae-contaminated water. Now, swimming is prohibited in our local reservoirs, but it's allowed at some lakes elsewhere in the state. The California State Water Board is reminding the public to be mindful of harmful algal blooms, which may appear blue, green, yellow, brown, or even red. You should also practice healthy water habits. Avoid algae and scum in the water and on shore. Keep an eye on children and dogs, and if you think a harmful algae bloom is present, do not let pets go in the water or drink it, or eat any scum on the shoreline. Don't drink the water or use it for your cooking. Wash yourself, your family, and your pets with clean water after any water play, even if you don't think there's algae in the water. And if you catch fish, throw away the guts and clean the fillets with tap water or bottled water before you cook it. Avoid eating any shellfish if you think a harmful algae bloom is present in the water. Report any suspected harmful algae blooms by calling the state water boards at this toll-free number, 844-729-6466, or notify a park ranger of your concerns. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
An 82-year-old Blossom Valley couple, David Wesley Jordan and his wife, Jean Adele Jordan, are dead from a murder-suicide, the medical examiner's office reports. David Jordan was a longtime football coach at Grossmont College, where he led the team to a statewide championship title in 2005 and was twice named State Coach of the Year. In 2012, he was named to the California Community College Football Coaches Hall of Fame. He told the San Diego Union-Tribune at that time, "I want to tell you that all that winning was great, but even greater was the chance I had to help so many young students to get their lives straight." A physical therapist told sheriff's homicide investigators that upon arrival at the home on Toya Lane in Blossom Valley area of unincorporated El Cajon last Friday morning, a note was on a sliding glass door. The therapist entered the home and found the couple's bodies in the living room. A revolver was in Jean Jordan's hands, and authorities concluded that she shot her husband, then killed herself. No information on a motive for the tragic deaths has been provided. If you are suffering from depression or suicidal thoughts, help is available by calling the San Diego Access and Crisis Line at 888-724-7240. That number again is 888-724-7240. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ in Blossom Valley, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Kamal Martin. He's a candidate running for the Lemon Grove City Council. Raised in Hawaii, he's lived in Lemon Grove for the last 10 years. He holds a master's degree in international studies and a bachelor's in history. He has 10 years of experience in government, as well as a diverse array of work experiences, including working as a wildland firefighter, a taxi driver, a special education assistant, a salesman, a nonprofit staffer, a government affairs specialist for the county's regional airport authority, as well as working for the California State Assembly as a district director, field representative, and land use consultant. Kamal, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam. Happy to be here.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to have you here. So what made you decide to run for the Lemon Grove City Council?
Miriam, I have a passion for working with people. I want to do absolutely everything I can to see families in our community thrive and grow. I want to see Lemon Grove be the best version of itself that it can be, and I hope to be a part of a reimagining and a revitalization of Lemon Grove.
What do you view as the most important issues facing Lemon Grove?
Oh, Miriam, Lemon Grove is not only in a crisis, but at a crossroads. Our city, we're in the midst of a structural deficit that's been in the making for some years now. We're spending almost 80% of our general fund on public safety, law enforcement, and fire. And if you get to the point where, as a city, the only services you're providing are fire and law enforcement, then what kind of a city are you exactly?
Yeah, it's a very severe problem. I know they've had to dip into their reserves in the last year. They've already cut pretty much all the fat that there is to be cut, so that's not an option. And there's even been talk among some that the city should consider unincorporating and going back to being part of the county. So what are your views on that? We can talk in a minute about all the programs and things that you'd love to bring about, but first, how would you pay for that? How would you get the city out of this fiscal hole that it's in?
So the first order of business, we need to increase revenue in our city. Part of that is supporting local businesses, helping them cut through red tape, eliminate unnecessary steps to their success, supporting the businesses that we already have, as well as finding a way to incentivize people to come to Lemon Grove. I love Lemon Grove, and the people who live there love Lemon Grove. For outsiders, when I talk to people, you know, what are your opinions about Lemon Grove? What do you come to Lemon Grove to do? The consensus seems to be that Lemon Grove isn't really thought of much at all. And that's a big problem.
Yeah, we look at La Mesa that's created a restaurant row, or El Cajon, where they have the big festivals. They're bringing back the Performing Arts Center starting next year. And you're right, Lemon Grove is a charming community. It's, in a lot of ways, a wonderful place to live, but it doesn't have that draw to bring people from outside. So what ideas do you have to change that?
So one of the things that La Mesa did, in addition to El Cajon and a few other East County cities, was an increase in sales tax, a transactions and use tax, I think would be a first step a huge first step in a positive direction of finding a way to identify additional sources of revenue and stop some of the bleeding. First of all, we have to refill and repair our reserves as a city. You pointed out that we're dipping into our emergency reserves just to carry on the programming that we're already, you know, sharing and implementing in the community. And it's not a sound way of operating.
How does Lemon Grove's sales tax compare now to the other cities in East County? And where do you think the appropriate level should be? Higher, lower, or about the same as the other cities?
We're definitely on the lower side compared to other East County cities at the moment. We're at about 7.75 cent sales tax. We could go a half cent. We potentially could even go a whole cent. Whatever we do, it's imperative that we include the business community in these decisions, that we have opportunities to continue to solicit feedback from residents within Lemon Grove. There was a recent proposal to increase sales tax half a cent that failed within the Lemon Grove City Council. If we don't find a really powerful way of increasing our revenue within the city of Lemon Grove, I don't know how we're going to survive, Miriam.
Yeah, I think that's a very legitimate point. So on the other hand, you raise the sales tax. How does that draw people into the city? Do you need to then create different kinds of businesses maybe that would bring people in as opposed to just, you know, going somewhere else where the tax is cheaper?
That's a good question. And that's part of why it's really important to make sure that we solicit feedback from the business community so that we understand their needs. And we also have to recognize Lemon Grove's position as the gateway to East County in many respects, but also a sister community to southeastern San Diego, to the city of La Mesa, mm-hmm. to unincorporated areas of Spring Valley. A lot of the people who shop and spend their money in Lemon Grove are residents of these cities as well.
Right.
I don't know if 1 cent of an increase in sales tax is going to keep people from shopping in Lemon Grove. I don't think it's stopped people from shopping in La Mesa. I don't think it's stopped people from shopping in El Cajon.
Probably not, other than maybe for something like a car. But I think if you're going out to dinner or you're buying gifts or something, it's probably not going to make a difference.
I think you're right. And I think most people probably don't think that much about sales tax when they buy things, even larger ticket items like a car. So it's definitely something that needs to be on the table and explored, and it's something that I would support provided sufficient outreach has been done to the community and we don't do too little of an increase. I use the example of a kind of a sports analogy. If it's third and 15, you can't throw for 2 or 3 yards and try and get that first down. We have to go all the way for that first down now and set ourselves up in the right position to get the revenue that we need to continue to provide, you know, the programming that our residents desire.
Right. We've heard some talk about loosening regulations to allow wineries and breweries to come to town, which would be sort of a new base of potential sales and sales tax revenue. What do you think about that?
I support that, Miriam. I think one of the other challenges that Lemon Grove is facing, there's a bit of an opportunity to rebrand ourselves as a city. A brewery, other, you know, wineries, boutique establishments to draw people to kind of a nightlife in Lemon Grove to revitalize our downtown would be a fantastic thing. We do have a brewery that's coming as soon as later in 2018, maybe early 2019 off Broadway. I think it'll be a huge asset to the community.
Yeah, they've done that a lot out in Santee. They have quite a few breweries out there, a couple of them in El Cajon as well.
Absolutely.
Very interesting. On the budget, you've mentioned on your website that you might support taxes on marijuana dispensaries, which currently the city allows medical marijuana dispensaries. What are your views on the type of taxes that you might support for that? And also, what are your views on recreational marijuana? That's another issue, you know, that a lot of the cities are grappling with.
No, good question. One, I absolutely and wholeheartedly will support a tax on, you know, the cannabis industry within the city of Lemon Grove. I don't think we're in a position to turn down revenue sources from legitimate businesses. I think it's also important to point out that whether you support the cannabis industry or not, the people of Lemon Grove voted to allow for medicinal cannabis, so it's here. And I think there's a perception that the city is already receiving revenue from this industry, and we're not.
So are we talking about a business tax, an excise tax, or increasing a sales tax on that?
I think all of those options are on the table. One of the things that I've seen would be a tax on gross sales receipts. I think it's important before we begin to tax an industry that hasn't yet settled its feet and its legs in Lemon Grove, we need to work with the cannabis industry. We need to work with those entrepreneurs and those business people to find what are the best practices on how we can work together to find an arrangement that's mutually beneficial, that's good for the city fiscally, and that also respects the character of our community. Our planning and our planning department makes sure that dispensaries wouldn't be located in sensitive areas. You know, they have to be a minimum amount of, I think, 1,000 feet away from schools, from faith institutions and preschools. And I think that's important. And if we can find the space where it works from a zoning standpoint, we should allow it. We should work with these businesses and find a way to generate revenue.
Very good. Do you have an opinion on recreational marijuana, if there were to be either a council initiative or a citizens initiative to legalize that?
I would support an initiative to bring recreational marijuana to the city of Lemon Grove, provided that we're able to find a way to generate revenue from the medicinal industry that the voters have made their voices heard and said very clearly that they'd like to see that we're not yet taxing.
Can you tell us some of the programs that you would like to see if this revenue problem could be worked out? What are some of the things that you would like to do to make Lemon Grove a better, more positive place for everyone to live?
Certainly. One of the things that I think is tremendously important is to think about the agricultural history of Lemon Grove. And it's really a rich history. And I think as we move forward to revitalize and reimagine our community, we should begin to leverage that history and bring that into our present, whether it's supporting farmers markets, whether it's creating more community gardens. We have a recreation center in Lemon Grove that we frankly don't have enough money within the city's current budget to run the types of programming we need to keep young people engaged. It's really, really important. You know, if we're not keeping young people and our youth in the forefront of all of our decisions as elected officials and as a community, then what really are we doing? We also have a large population of seniors in Lemon Grove. I'd like to see opportunities for more walkable space, more green areas. And when I think about infrastructure, I don't just think about sidewalks and streetlights, which we desperately need in our city as well. But parks and green space is a vital part of that equation as well.
Yes, they are. What are your views about the housing situation? We know that San Diego County has a housing crisis, especially affordable housing. There's a lot of demand for the young people today to have an affordable place to live and not have to move out of the area, as well as for seniors and others. On the other hand, in Lemon Grove, when some high rises, I think 4 or 6 stories, something like that, were proposed, there were some in the community that objected to it, at least in the location it was proposed at. There were concerns about parking and views and community character. What are your views on the appropriate balance between those two viewpoints?
That's a great question, Miriam. One, I absolutely support affordable housing, and just the word affordable housing has become such a loaded term in certain respects.
Yeah, some of them that they say are affordable, it's you'd have to have a six-figure income just about to afford it.
Exactly. So part of that is it would behoove us to expand our definition and our understanding of affordable housing. We don't have a lot of land in Lemon Grove, so space is at a premium.
Yeah.
And there have been a number of pretty recent developments in Lemon Grove to increase our stock of housing, which I think is definitely a right step in the direction. And when you look at Lemon Grove as one city within San Diego County, I believe we're doing more than our fair share to increase the stock of available housing vis-a-vis the land that we have available. Now, the recent development that you spoke of that was shot down because of some community concern over parking, which is a legitimate problem. Lemon Grove is a small city, but traffic is becoming a nightmare in certain areas. This recent realignment project that has yet to be completed, which is one of the largest public works projects in Lemon Grove history, over schedule, over budget, which is par for the course a lot of times. And at the same time, that's not all in the city of Lemon Grove because, you know, we have Sandag involved, we have Caltrans involved. We need to make sure that we understand what type of city we'd like to be and using that understanding to inform how we can grow and grow in the best way possible. When people talk about public safety and the impact on the community from a crime standpoint that increases in affordable housing could bring, those are also loaded questions, but legitimate at the same time.
Yeah, crime is an issue I wanted to ask you about also. What is the crime situation like right now in Lemon Grove? And do you have any ideas for making things safer from a crime standpoint?
We're a city, and we do have to deal with crime. Unfortunately, sometimes some of that is serious, and sometimes some of it is violent. By and large, I would consider Lemon Grove to be a very safe community. It's a tight-knit community, it's a working-class community, and it's one of the few places within San Diego County where everybody kind of knows everybody. You can still run into your local elected officials. You can run into your mayor. You can have personal relationships mm-hmm. with these people. And that's one of the things that I love about it. One of my priorities is prioritizing public health and public safety. And I think we should always talk about public health before we talk about public safety. Two of the big issues that law enforcement will be the first to tell you that they have to spend a lot of time with is engaging with people who are experiencing homelessness and substance abuse issues, which, in my opinion, are public health issues first and foremost.
They definitely are. So what are your ideas for dealing with the homelessness problem and the drug abuse problem?
So part of that, when we talk about investments in infrastructure, cleaning up public areas and green space, creating more walkable areas, sidewalks, street lighting, eliminating some of these dark and shady corners, so to speak, of our city. Crime generally is a function of economics. When people aren't doing well economically, that's where you begin to see crime happening.
True.
And crime doesn't take place in busy, crowded, well-lit thoroughfares to the same extent that it does when people are sparse and the streets are desolate. People who are healthy are more productive. And people who are more productive in turn stimulate our local economy. So I'd like to bring a health in all policies approach to all of our decision making within the city council to begin to take into account the impacts that health has on transportation, on our infrastructure, on education. And these might be things that aren't necessarily in our control, but the extent to which we can have more rec programs for kids to take advantage of, that'll help get young people off of streets and away from doing things that they might not need to be doing or absolutely shouldn't be doing, and giving them options.
Yeah, sometimes it's a penny-wise, pound-foolish approach, isn't it? Where if you put a few dollars up front, it prevents having to spend more money on, say, law enforcement or drug treatment for
exactly.
somebody just by getting a kid off the streets and into a positive program when they're young.
And within the city of Lemon Grove, we probably have less than 100 people who are dealing with homelessness in the city right now. The extent to which that we can identify programs, whether it's a safe parking space to take many of the families who are working families who don't have homes but still live in a car. I see kids getting ready for school in the morning coming out of cars, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah,
and we need to find places and ways to support these families. So it's connected to housing and the affordability of housing or the lack thereof. Part of addressing homelessness is also stopping people from becoming homeless before it happens.
Yes.
And I think back to the penny-wise, pound-foolish approach, it's a whole lot more fiscally responsible to keep people from becoming homeless than to spend money on programs once they have. Now, we have to be doing both, but we need to work on both ends of this challenge and meet in the middle.
Yeah, very good point. What do you believe are your strongest assets for serving as a councilman in Lemon Grove?
No, that's a great question. You alluded to my background and that I've done a lot of things and kind of the path that led me to politics and government. I think that's a huge asset. I was a wildland firefighter. I was a taxi driver. I worked in a special ed classroom. I used to sell cars, worked in a nonprofit organization. I've been a community college professor. All of these things give me the opportunity to not just develop relationships and networks that often aren't housed in one person, so to speak, but they allow me to see problems and challenges from a multitude of perspectives. I know how to ask the right questions, and I know where to find answers.
Very good. Yeah, you've worn a lot of hats and walked in a lot of people's shoes, as they say.
Yes, ma'am.
Kamal, you've mentioned that you are a registered independent. Can you explain why?
Certainly. I'm independent. In the state of California, it's often called declined to state or unaffiliated, meaning I have no formal affiliation to any political party. I was once a Democrat for some time, and I decided that the best way forward for my city and for the best chance at a truer form of representative democracy was to not be beholden to the corporate interests that have made their way into both sides of these parties. I want to work with everybody who's willing to work with the city of Lemon Grove to see it become better. And I think there are a lot of people who feel similarly, that they're voiceless and kind of stuck in between these warring camps. And I'd like to focus more on solutions and not politics.
Okay, thank you. Who are your key endorsements?
Current mayor of Lemon Grove, Raquel Vasquez, former mayor, Mary Sessom, a number of Lemon Grove business owners. I have a number of other endorsements that are still pending and in the process, and hopefully they'll come through soon.
Mm-hmm.
My focus has really been to engage local residents more than institutions for support at this point, because it's going to be people whose feedback that I'm going to solicit and hopefully be able to listen to create those quality of life solutions that we're all looking for.
Very good. And Kamal, where can people find out more information about your candidacy?
You can go to my website, www.kamal4lg.com, and that's K-A-M-A-A-L, the number 4LG.com. I also have a Facebook site at Kamal Loves Lemon Grove. You can find out more information there. Please do so. I'd like to earn all of your votes, and I'm hoping that you'll hold me to task as your next city council member.
And listeners, for those of you who just tuned in, we've been speaking with Kamal Martin, who is one of four candidates running for the Lemon Grove City Council. We've invited all four of them to be interviewed, and we'll be airing the other interviews in the near future. Kamal, I'm going to let you have the last word here today. What else would you like our listeners to know about you and your candidacy for Lemon Grove City Council?
A huge part of being an effective council member within a small city like Lemon Grove is listening to your residents. Beyond that, we also have to understand that Lemon Grove is one city within a county, and I have the skills to be an advocate that's highly effective for our city within the county of San Diego as well, and then to be an advocate for the county of San Diego within the state of California, and beyond that, to be an advocate for the state of California with the federal government. We have to find resources from every place possible. We can't leave any stone unturned. And I think at this point, every option needs to be on the table as to how we go forward as a city, how we survive, and how we put our best foot forward.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you, Miriam.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
We've got lots of exciting events for you today coming up across East County, including raspberry picking and farm tours at Julian Farm and Orchard, Hank Williams Jr. at Viejas, Gregory Page and Sky Ladd in concert at Schwazdale Winery in Ramona, the Julian Music Festival, the Santa Isabel Mission's Bicentennial Celebration and Harvest Festival, Alley Cat Art Walk in El Cajon, a masquerade ball in El Cajon, spooky camping at Lake Jennings, our own East County Dining Club at Four Penny House in La Mesa, Fair Trade Shopping, and the Borrego Days Desert Festival.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert events continue each Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. Bring a picnic dinner or arrive early and dine at a local restaurant. Bring a receipt from participating downtown restaurants to enter a prize drawing. Concerts coming up include a Tom Petty tribute by the Petty Breakers on September 14th, Sirens Crush playing modern pop and dance music September 21st, and the Mighty Untouchables for the season finale on September 28th.
Alley Cat Art Walk will take place on Friday, September 14th from 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. It's the perfect place for lovers of arts and music. Plus, you can enjoy wine tasting, a beer garden, artisan craft booths, boutique vendors, live music, and children's activities in addition to fine art. Activities will be held in Arts Alley between Main and Reyes Streets, as well as surrounding streets. Alley Cat Art Walk is organized by St. Madeline's Sophie Center, which helps developmentally disabled adults and is supported by a San Diego County Community Enhancement Grant.
The 49th Annual Julian Music Festival will celebrate end of summer at Mangini Winery in Julian on Saturday, September 15th from 1 to 7 p.m. This year's festival will feature a variety of musical genres, including Americana, contemporary jazz, folk, and more. For advanced tickets and a full list of performers, you can visit julianmusicfestival.com.
The Santa Isabel Indian Mission is celebrating its bicentennial on September 16th. The multicultural celebration will include an outdoor mass and brunch with the bishop, Native American bird singers and drummers, a flyover by the Navy's Blue Angels, military salutes, multicultural dance groups, local celebrities, a historical wagon train show, tours of the mission and museum, native speakers and historians, an arts and crafts show, and more. The mission was founded in 1918 as an outpost of the San Diego Mission de Alcala and has been holding services ever since in a series of structures through the last 200 years. The mission fell into disrepair and was nearly forced to shut down,
But now a committee has formed that's been working hard to restore the facilities and revive traditional celebrations for the community, including the bicentennial event on September 16th, as well as bringing back the Harvest Festival on October 20th and a fiesta in June of next year. Volunteers and donations are needed to sustain this monumental effort. You can learn more or get involved by visiting the Santa Isabel Indian Mission on Facebook.
Raspberries at Julian Farm and Orchard are ready to be picked. Blackberries are almost ready, and next, corn and pumpkins. You can enjoy raspberry picking and farm tours on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m. from September 15th through October 13th. The farm is located on Highway 78 on the Santa Isabel side of the highway next to Winola Pizza. Julian Farm and Orchard is owned by the same people who operate the Julian Mining Company across the street. You can also enjoy tractor-drawn hay rides, barnyard visits, and shopping at the farmer's wife's store in addition to picking berries and other crops on weekends starting September 15th. For more information, you can visit julianminingcompany.com.
Legendary singer Hank Williams Jr. will be live in concert at Viejas and Alpine on September 21st. He first took to the stage at the Grand Ole Opry at age 14 and has since had hits for the common man, from A Country Boy Can Survive to It's Hard Standing in the Shadow of a Very Famous Man, referring to his father, Hank Williams Sr., as well as his Monday Night Football song and his latest hit, Stirring It Up. Tickets are available at the Viejas Gift Shop at axs.com or by phone at 888-929-7849.
Gregory Page and pianist Sky Ladd will perform at Schwazdale Winery in Ramona on September 22nd from 1 to 4 p.m. for an afternoon of vintage and perhaps even some brand new music on the Vineyard stage. To borrow Gregory's famous lyrics, Let's Wine and Dine, you can wine and dine on Schwazdale's estate wines and artisan pizzas while savoring music from the duo. The same adjectives that sommeliers use to describe wine can be said for Gregory Page's music: elegant, opulent, full-bodied, bright, refined, complex, and velvety, with a hint of imagination and magic. For more information, you can visit schwazdalewinery.com.
The East County Dining Club invites you to their next dinner, which will be held at the Fourpenny House Scottish Restaurant and Brewery in La Mesa on Wednesday, September 26th at 6:30 p.m. You can savor some authentic Scottish cuisine, choosing from a menu that includes such specialties as bangers and mash, Scottish mussels, crofter's pie, fresh salmon, Yorkshire wraps, artisanal cheeses, Scottish paella, curry roasted cauliflower, and bread pudding. Fourpenny House will donate 20% of proceeds to benefit East County Magazine and our East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. There will also be prize drawings. RSVP to reserve space at 619-698-7617 or email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. You can check out the menu at fourpennyhouse.com.
Lake Jennings in Lakeside is hosting spooky Campoween events the 2 weekends before Halloween, October 19th through 21st and 26th through 28th, complete with ghost stories, s'mores, a campsite decorating contest, trick-or-treating, and creepy crafts. On Friday nights, get in the spirit with ghost stories and s'mores at 7 p.m. Then on Saturdays, there will be campsite trick-or-treating from 4 to 5 p.m., followed by a campsite decorating contest with judging at 6 p.m. Prizes include an all-inclusive camping weekend. And on Sundays, you can also enjoy creepy craft time at 10 a.m. For campground reservations, you can call 619-390-1623. And for more information, visit lakejennings.org.
A Night to Remember is a masquerade ball to benefit St. Madeline Sophie Center. It will be held on September 28th from 7 p.m. to midnight at the Crystal Palace in El Cajon. This magical evening of festivities and excitement will include dinner and an open bar, a fashion show, a saxophone player and a violinist, plus a DJ to dance the night away. For tickets and reservations, you can visit Stephanie Young Consulting at syc.ticketleap.com.
You're invited to shop with joy and purpose at the annual La Mesa Fair Trade Shopping event on Sunday, October 14th from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall in La Mesa. You can enjoy fair trade ice cream and food samples while perusing handmade baskets, jewelry, leather goods, clothing, toys, pottery, Christmas ornaments, gift baskets, coffee, tea, chocolate, and more. You can make a difference with your purchases this season by improving people's lives and the environment. The goal of the fair trade movement is to pay farmers and artisans in developing countries a fair price for their goods to help alleviate poverty around the world.
The 7th annual Haunt Fest on Maine is back on Friday, October 19th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. in the 200 block of East Main Street in downtown El Cajon. This fun, family-friendly Halloween-themed community event features live music, costume contests, carnival rides and games, candy challenge activities, Monsters, Inc., and Monsters University outdoor movies, face painting, craft booths, inflatables, and more. For more information, visit hauntfest.org.
An air parade will sweep the skies with over 30 vintage and military aircraft as part of this year's parade in Borrego Springs on Saturday, October 20th at 10 a.m., followed by a 10:30 street parade complete with floats, equestrians, trick-riding cowboys, marching bands, and more. It's all part of the two-day 53rd annual Borrego Days Festival, October 20th and 21st. Borrego Days includes crafts, vendors, kids' activities such as rock climbing, carnival rides, and inflatable slides, food and drinks, plus live music to dance the night away. You can find more information at borregodays.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section of our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
A controversial proposal for a sand mining project in Lakeside's East El Monte Valley is moving forward. The county has published a draft environmental impact report on the project and will hold a public scoping meeting on Tuesday, September 25th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. in the Lakeside Community Center. The county seeks public comments, which you can deliver during the meeting or by email or mail no later than October 29th at 4 p.m. The environmental impact report raises serious concerns and acknowledges that the project has the potential to increase exposure of workers, residents, and visitors to potentially deadly valley fever spores. Sand mining would also negatively impact sensitive and protected species, such as gnatcatchers and glossy snakes, as well as generate noise, dust, impacts on traffic, and potentially archaeological resources. The project has generated substantial opposition in the community. The proposed project would extract over 12.5 million tons of sand and gravel over 12 years on a 479-acre site, including the San Diego River Channel. About 228 acres of the land would be used for mining in four phases, with reclamation planned at the end of each stage. The project's supporters say the sand is needed to meet demand for road construction in our county. The mining would produce 557 tons of sand and gravel each hour, requiring 157 truck trips each day, 6 days a week, starting at 7 a.m. The public meeting on this project, again, is slated for Tuesday, September 25th at 5:30 p.m. in the Lakeside Community Center. For information on how to submit comments in writing by that October 29th deadline, you can call the County Planning Department at 858-495-5802 or visit the Preserve Our El Monte page on Facebook. That number again is 858-495-5802. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ in Lakeside, this is John Fistier.
A bench warrant for the arrest of Jessica Colosho, wife of El Cajon Councilman Ben Colosho, was issued on August 31st by San Diego Superior Court Judge Timothy Taylor. The warrant was issued after Jessica Colosho failed to show up at a judgment debtors conference in a civil lawsuit filed by attorney Jimmy Parker on behalf of three contestants in a beauty pageant run by the Colosho's and by owners of an El Cajon taco shop.
Plaintiffs allege sexual harassment, fraud, and defamation by the Kalashos, who jointly operate the Miss Middle East Beauty Pageant and the Middle Eastern Chamber of Commerce. A bench warrant is issued by a judge when an individual fails to follow court rules or comply with a court order. It differs from an arrest warrant issued after a law enforcement officer establishes probable cause that a crime occurred. Sheriff deputies are not actively seeking out Kalasho for arrest, but she could be arrested if she is stopped for a traffic violation or is present at any public function, including El Cajon City Council meetings. If she is taken into custody, her bail has been set at $500. The Kalashos do not have an attorney of record and are suing their former attorney, Stephen Liosi, alleging malpractice they say resulted in a $40,000 judgment won by attorney Lena Cherry, who has sued Ben Kalasho 5 times and won each case. Both Kalashos openly taunted law enforcement authorities Friday evening when they published a post on Facebook asking followers for recommendations on where to eat dinner. The post was made 10 hours after Jessica skipped her court appearance. Some commenters mocked the post. One wrote, "Try 3 Hots and a Cot downtown. They're on Front Street," a reference to the county jail's location. Another suggested Las Colinas, the women's prison in Santee. The responses included a picture of inmates receiving food in a prison cafeteria, as well as an animated clip of a dance sequence from Elvis Presley's movie Jailhouse Rock. The posts were removed, apparently by Ben Kalasho, by the next morning. The hearing that Jessica Kalasho missed was a proceeding in which she would have been questioned about personal assets. It was spurred by allegations that the Kalashos have filed false mortgage documents to hide assets in order to avoid paying a judgment if one is ordered after the trial verdict. It is alleged that they have over $1 million in assets, with 2 homes in Fletcher Hills and Santee. One of the filings is a deed of trust in which the Kalashos recorded a $500,000 loan taken out against their El Cajon residence. The record lists the lender as Israel Moses Seif. An investigation by the San Diego Union-Tribune found only one person named Israel Moses Seif, a man born in England in 1889 who died in 1972. Filing false real estate documents, if proven true in civil court, could open the Kalashos up to criminal charges. Ben Kalasho was subject to a debtor's examination 2 weeks ago, but did not fully cooperate with questioning. Judge Taylor threatened to send the councilman to jail and issued a contempt of court order, which he later vacated. After the hearing Friday, Attorney Parker said his clients are looking forward to a jury trial and called the evidence overwhelming. He criticized Kalasho's alleged use of aliases and fake social media accounts to defame others as against the principles of a free democracy and despicable behavior of a public official. Ben Kalasho pled guilty to 2 counts of violating California workers' compensation laws in 2015 and accepted a plea deal which allowed him to pay a fine. He remains on probation until October 1st under orders to break no laws. Plaintiff's lawyers are seeking to have the councilman back in court in 2 weeks and to call for his probation to be revoked. If he is remanded into custody and misses 3 consecutive council meetings, he could be removed from office by the city council. An arrest could also damage his campaign against councilmember Gary Kendrick in the November election, as voters learn more about Kalasho's legal and ethical scandals. Kalasho also faces a separate federal lawsuit filed by activist Mark Lane because Kalasho deleted Lane's negative posts on his Facebook page. Lane's lawsuit comes on the heels of a May ruling in a case involving President Donald Trump's Twitter account. A New York federal judge ruled that public officials cannot delete negative social media posts by constituents because this viewpoint discrimination violates the First Amendment of the Constitution. Kalasho has repeatedly stated that he does not wish to be contacted by East County Magazine or the San Diego Union-Tribune, which he has dismissed as fake media, despite numerous prominent journalism awards won by both news organizations. Our own news team recently won the San Diego Society for Professional Journalists' prestigious Gloria Penner Award for our coverage of Kalasho's many threats. Meanwhile, Virtually all major newspapers and TV stations in the San Diego region are now covering the Colosio scandals. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ in El Cajon, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is John Pistier with East County Magazine's People Power Report. Construction is nearing completion in La Mesa for the newest clubhouse to be operated by Boys and Girls Clubs of East County. The new family clubhouse will house the Gagon Academy, a state-of-the-art learning center and homework room, as well as the Bill Walton Gymnasium. Opening day is expected sometime in late September or early October. Forrest Higgins, CEO of the East County Boys and Girls Club, says making the dream become a reality has been a textbook example of community collaboration to help serve children for generations to come. The new 26,000-square-foot clubhouse, largest of the six Boys and Girls Clubs facilities in East County, is located at La Mesa Arts Academy, previously known as La Mesa Middle School. The campus is also home to the Brady Family Teen Center, as well as providing room for 200 children ages 5 to 18 to attend after-school recreational and learning activities. A capital campaign launched in 2012 has raised about $9.4 million, including $3 million from La Mesa residents Ron and Mary Alice Brady, owners of the Brady Company's construction firm, and another $3 million from the estate of the late Eleni and Wolfgang Gagon, real estate investors from San Diego. Brady says, "We decided to support the Boys and Girls Clubs because it's better to build kids than try to mend adults." He adds, "Very soon the construction sounds of jackhammers, buzzsaws, and machinery will be replaced with the joyful sounds of children's laughter, basketballs being dribbled on the court, and friendships being made." Among the youngsters planning to enjoy the new Brady Family Clubhouse will be some of the 1,200 students attending the La Mesa Arts Academy. Also benefiting from the new Brady Family Clubhouse will be youth soccer players who practice and play games on the school's grassy fields. County Supervisor Diane Jacob also got involved by allocating $170,000 in public funds for solar panels at the site. Grants for Boys and Girls Club of East County were provided from the county's Neighborhood Reinvestment Program. The City of La Mesa also lent its support to the project with road improvements. The new clubhouse will be a catalyst to help change the entire western La Mesa area, says La Mesa Mayor Mark Arapostathis, who is also a co-founder of the La Mesa Arts Academy and director of the theater arts at the school. He adds, "When the doors open on the first day, the impact on our youth will be tremendous and immediate."
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.